Aaron Dreger, our hockey insider, will join us here in a moment. The Leafs are back in action tonight in Winnipeg. Nick Foligno making his debut on a line alongside Matthews and Marner. So it has the chance to be kind of a storybook type of evening. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if he scored tonight. He kind of has that vibe to him. Like, the name, he's wearing his dad's hat of, you know, back in the 90s. And
dude, I tell you, you get in that position with two talented players like that, and you see with Zach Hyman. Zach Hyman's really talented. He's not just hardworking. But if you do your job and you get to pucks and you give them to the skill guys and then go to the net and do your thing, you get a lot of looks, man. You get a lot of rebounds. You get a lot of open looks because everyone's so hyper-focused on Matthews with that shot and Marner with the skill and the playmaking ability. You could get yourself into some situations where you're like, I'm going to have a field day out there. And that's what his job is, to go out there and do the dirty work first and see if the field day can happen after that.
I'd like to, like, if he scores, do you want to see him do that jump?
Yes,
I feel like,
yes,
he'll do it. And then what'll happen is, like, Masters will write an article on it. We'll have to talk, and he'll have to do it every time. I'm telling you.
You're not doing that one every
jump
time
is coming.
In 2021.
The jump is coming.
He has claimed he won't commit to the jump.
No. He's got so much on his mind right now, leaving the family, quarantining, getting the team, meeting the team. He might not even think about it.
That's true.
It also comes down to context of the game, right? Like, if they're down 5-1 and it's 2 minutes left in the third, he taps.
You're not doing that. You're not doing the Matt Duchene in Colorado.
No.
What if it's an OT winner? Is he jumping?
Oh, jump through the sky. Absolutely. He should jump through the roof. I think that's the only way it should be expected.
OT winner.
He scores an OT winner tonight. Jump. You got to jump like Mike. You got to jump like the old man. Because, like, Mike Foligno had the bucket and the celebration. Like, you talk about cornering the market in terms of just memories and kind of having your own thing that people recognize. Smart play, man. That's
a
smart marketing
bucket,
play.
It was an ugly bucket. It was one of the worst buckets. Like, but he endeared him. Like, he's an awesome guy. I'm sure you've met him. Oh, like, Hayes, have you ever met
I believe. We've interviewed him before.
Awesome.
Yeah, seems like a great guy.
Well, their whole family is. They're quality people. They're just
quality
salt
people.
Of the earth. But the bucket, I think he knew how awfully it was, and he embraced it. Like, maybe there was a safety factor to it because the padding was so thick. Like, didn't it seem like it was a giant, like, thick padding?
Yeah, it was a monster bucket. Like, there's no dancing around that. I mean, it was an outrageous helmet.
Right.
In an era where there really weren't that many great-looking helmets back then. Like, the one you guys always talk about, the CCM standard helmet, was a good-looking helmet. You know?
Right.
It was such a pleasure to get that thing and put it on with no visor or cage. Mm-hmm. It was just, and you're leaving it in the room for warm-up. It was like, I've made it. The CCM is mine.
Yeah. It was exclusively the NHL, basically, right?
Like, no, you know what? I had it before, man, because it was a big college look with the cage. That helmet with the bubble cage, Michigan State, Michigan, like, that was a big look. So a bunch of teams in the midget league, they all had that cooking. So I was familiar with the CCM beforehand.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So, well, there you go. But if it wasn't the standard CCM, basically it was a bad helmet. You know, like, essentially, you're looking at a bad helmet, you know. Like, the greatest player of all time had a bad helmet. Like, Gretzky's bucket, that's a bad helmet.
It's like, even, like, some guys, like Keith Acton and Kenny Linsman, they pulled off the Messier bucket. But I'm like, I'm not wearing the Messier bucket. My head would look so round. I'm just not doing it.
Right.
It's like, it's got to be the CCM.
Well, some guys look good in it. Some guys just didn't. But I think of Hawk and Lube. There were some bad helmets back in the day. Like, Hawk and Lube, I don't know if you remember that guy.
They're
Butchie Goring.
Butchie,
I don't even know what the hell.
Brutal helmet.
Wasn't that made of felt or something? Like, it was
honestly,
weird...
it looks like he scalped a pool table and wrapped it around a squash.
Right.
And it was brutal. Like, there were just some, you know, and listen, technology played a factor in that. Like, back in the day when only some guys wore helmets and, you know, 80% of the league didn't have a helmet on. It's just the weirdest transition, I think, in sports history, maybe, in terms of just equipment and the evolution of equipment, that era in the 80s, you know, late 70s into the early to mid 90s, when it went from predominantly no helmet to about 50-50, and then at the end there were like 10 guys still not wearing a helmet. And just so weird. So goofy to see. On like Leafs TV, they'll show it. They'll show a game from like 1989 and literally, you know, 33 of the 36 guys.
I took face-offs against Craig McTavish.
And I played with him.
Yeah, I wanted to say to him, dude, I'm looking at your curly hair off the face-off right now. Like, where's your helmet? How the hell are you playing in the best league in the world with no bucket on?
Not even the best league in the world, the most physical. I'm told you this. Craig McTavish one time, right in front of the bench, got hit headfirst into the boards. He had no helmet on.
It's incredible. Guys,
he just got up and skated away.
Taking it hard to the net, like wide post, and just getting buried.
Imagine like a young guy practicing with him saying, hey, you forgot your helmet, bud. He's like, actually, no, I don't actually have one.
I don't own a helmet.
I don't
understand.
Own.
There's not one that's like mine. I don't know where on earth.
Oh, you can just tell him, go back and try to find mine, please. Yeah. Hurry up.
Like, yeah. No, you don't understand, man. Like, I don't have it. Anyway, here's Darren Dreger, a TSN Hockey Insider. Would you concede that too, Dregs? I mean, you're a guy that's into a lot of different sports. The transition from no helmet to helmet, that 15 to 20-year period, late 70s to early 90s, it's just so weird. It's such a goofy evolution.
Yeah. And you're right.
It's still on tape. You can still see it from time to time.
I know. It's nuts. But I'm listening to you guys talk about MacT, and so I'll give you a little bit of history, and this probably won't surprise you, because if you played against Craig McTavish, then you played against Kelly Buchberger, who I grew up with in Langenberg, Saskatchewan. One of the off seasons, and it might have been the year, whatever year it was, there was only one of them where Buchberger scored 20 goals. And Slats, you know, obviously he didn't have any sort of bonus structure in his contract. He's just hanging on for dear life. So Slats gave him like two brand new skidoos. That, like, just as a gesture of good faith. So that offseason, we're hanging out at Carlton Trail Golf Course, which is right between Langenberg and Spy Hill. And Spy Hill, Saskatchewan, is the home of Jeff Odgers. And we get in one, and it's late at night. We're on the beach near this little park. And Bucky decides, and Buchberger and McTavish are really, really good buddies. So I know Craig very well on a different level. But Bucky decides he wants to wrestle. Well, I'm the idiot that puts his hand up to say, yeah, I'll wrestle you. How bad can it be?
Yeah.
Well, I get a lucky kind of twist on him, and I put him in a fireman's carry over my shoulder, and down he goes. And, I mean, it was like grabbing a tiger by the tail, because he gets up, and he's pissed, and he's embarrassed. And I don't – so instantly he goes, fists, as in a question, fists. I don't even get to answer, and he splits my nose wide open.
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
As if it's your fault. He offered the the wrestling plan.
Yeah. And I was the only guy who, stupidly, of course, put his hand up and said, I mean, how bad is it going to be? He's going to pin me in 30 seconds, and it'll be game over. I just happened to get a little bit of lucky leverage on him, and the next thing I know, fists. And Butch, and I'm laying on the ground, and I'm bleeding like a stuck pig. So as soon as I heard you guys talk about MacT and buckets, that was the memory that came to mind.
Yeah, that one would probably stick around. I'm not that surprised about that. That's a tough outcome. But you got the start. You got the hop on them, so you've always got that part of the story that you got to push. So we've heard from the, I guess, the quizmaster. Came across stat about McDavid. Yes, about the primary points.
17 primary assists.
Yeah. So, well, what he's got is he's got 30. He's got 63 primary points. He's got 25 goals and 38 first assists, which puts him at 63 primary points. The only guy in the league who has more total points is Draisaitl. So, in other words, if you made it a rule, McDavid cannot qualify for a second assist. Not allowed. Cannot happen. He'd still be second in points. Which is a pretty incredible stat to dig up, and credit to the Quizmaster for finding that. But it really puts into perspective what this guy's doing. I mean, it's right. It's outrageous, isn't it?
It's other world, but, you know, to try and you know, throw a little shade at the Quizmaster, he also thinks that second assist shouldn't count. They don't matter. Like those
I have
don't.
Never heard him say that, Darren.
I have.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You know how he gets on a tangent. Like
he gets garbage points. They don't count. Now, that's the extreme. But so just, and Brian, with all due respect, I don't know how that information got to you via the Quizmaster, whether it was directed to you or it came through Noodles or it came through ODOC or somewhere else. So I get a call at 7:45 a.m., and the Quizmaster is fired up. Like, he is planting a seed. And I was probably the second call. He probably called Dave Poulin first. So he was hot and bothered and so excited about what he had just discovered in terms of Connor McDavid's 17 assists, a primary assist. So that is the aside to what Connor McDavid is doing on a game-in and in game-out basis, which is annihilating you know, other teams' defensive approaches and whatnot. I mean, what he's doing is extraordinary. We know this, but I kind of feel like we probably would know that or pay attention to what's going on without the Quizmaster's help, but I'm just trying to keep him in perspective there.
Yeah, well, it's, again, I mean, we every once in a while we circle back to the Hart Trophy, and I don't see how it goes to anyone but McDavid.
I agree. The only way I could say, if you want to get back at the Quizmaster, just challenge anything with the Canadiens' history. Like, if you said, you know what, Maurice Richard had a bunch of second assists in 1957. Just let's get those out of the history books.
Yep.
Like, he'll crawl through the phone and sucker you. Like,
no kidding. If you ever, and I don't know that there would be one, and God rest his soul, legendary Jean Béliveau, if you ever say anything even remotely negative about Jean Béliveau as a player or as a human being,
or Paul Kariya. Or Paul.
Well, that would be, you're right. Paul Kariya is in that conversation too. The Quizmaster, he gets surly at that point.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
understandable. I mean, you got to have a team. You got to have a player that you go to war on. And those are, you know, not bad options. I will say that. The history they have kind of speaks for itself. We were obviously discussing the decision by Sheldon Keefe to go with Foligno tonight on a line with Matthews and Marner. And I like it. I think it's about, you know, he's a veteran. He'll be ready to go. He's not going to play 20 minutes tonight, but give him a taste, give him a shot. And I think he's embracing it very well, and I expect him to fit in very well, you know, starting tonight.
Well, I couldn't agree more, Brian. And look, I mean, you can count me among perhaps many in the group who are skeptical of Joe Thornton at the start of the season hanging in there on that line long term. I just didn't see it from a 41-year-old player. And I will give Jumbo his full respect for this. He managed to stay on that line a lot longer than I was expecting. And I'm not questioning the signing of Joe Thornton even a little bit. I think he's a great ad, but I just didn't think he'd be able to keep up right out of the gate. And he did. Like, he provided some boost to that line. I don't think there's any doubt of that. Has there ever been a better time to try something fresh and new than there is right now? This team is in a funk. They're in a funk. I mean, be it goaltending, defensive coverage as a group, whatever. You know, you guys can slice and dice the analysis of the Toronto Maple Leafs better than I'm going to do here. It's just, you're injecting, you know, a real good player into your lineup. The expectation of Leafs Nation is that Nick Foligno, whatever role he plays, is going to be positive. So why not throw him right up with the top dogs out of the gate and see what happens? And, you know, if they have success, as I expect they will, then you roll with it for a bit. You know, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. I'm not at all surprised by it, and I think that those three are going to have success.
Dregs, you wonder if Jumbo could literally create a position moving forward. He might have to, like, do some work, like work on the power play and help some young guys, but just to be around. Like, just to be around, come in the locker room, have a coffee. It's just like having that guy that's around and keeps everybody loose and everybody loves him. I think it's so valuable.
Yeah. And I think he's okay with that. That's my sense. Yeah.
Now, I was talking more when he's retired, like just say, hey, I'd like to be around the guys, help out where I can. I think that would be a terrific position in the future.
It's called assistant coach. That's what some guys do.
No.
Yeah, then it gets too legit, doesn't it? Then, you know, you're potentially having a squeak in the head coach's ear, and maybe that gets a little bit more delicate. I hear you, and I think that he'd be great at it because he's got such a good connection with all of those players. You know, I'm thinking of Milan Lucic in Calgary, and, you know, you guys, again, you can probably talk more on this, not that I'm deflecting, but Lucic is different in that he grew up in the environment in Boston and he learned the old school way, even though, you know, he's not that old now. But then he had to transition into other rooms where he is the more experienced guy and he doesn't have the same connection with the young Oilers. That he maybe does now with some of the Calgary Flames group. And that can be tough on those guys, right? Joe just seems to roll with it. Like he's as happy rollerblading in Vancouver with Austin Matthews that he would be, you know, doing whatever he's going to do as a 41, 42-year-old man. Like, he's just loving life. So whatever they can do to keep him in the organization, I think it's going to be a benefit. I just wonder from a lifestyle perspective what Joe and his family have in store. Maybe it's hanging around Ontario. Maybe it's going back to Switzerland and enjoying life there too. I think that whatever opportunity he wants to pursue, it's going to be there because that's how valuable a person he is, and the history in his game speaks for itself.
I agree. I just don't think that the one thing, like, we forget, he's set financially. I don't know if he wants to hang around. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he might be, I think he wants to hang around the rink or a little bit, but he might get to a point where he's like, if I'm retiring, I want to take on a different challenge. I am going to go back to Switzerland. I'm going to go to San Jose and you know, I don't know if he has a family. I'm sure he does, but you know, that type of stuff, like your priorities change. Whereas hanging around a team or being around a team, it's a grind sometimes, like having to be there every day. Like, you know, mentorship is different, but I look at a guy like Thornton. I mean, we talked about it yesterday. Does he want to play another year? That's the other thing.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, based
on
him.
You said it, Hayes. Yeah.
Him pushing his energy level. Listen, he's not in it for the money anymore. And if he's pursuing a cup, and if they don't win it, and he gets an opportunity to go wherever it might be, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked. But, listen, he's still playing. He's still a part of the program. They've got 10 games left, and we're still trying to figure out how the playoffs are going to work out here in the north. And you've got some interesting details on that, Dregs, in terms of how this could work out.
I mean, in a perfect world, and I can't imagine it's going to be perfect given the pandemic anytime soon, and that's by playoff time here. You know, you do have borders open, and you do have business resuming as close to whatever normal could be between Canada and the U.S., so that's probably the least likely of the scenarios. The other one would be, as we've talked about before, you adopt a U.S. city for the North Division champion, and that team would stay in that city for both the conference final and the potential Stanley Cup final. And then the third one, which is interesting, is all four Canadian playoff teams would play out of one venue in the United States. And then, you know, the teams that advance stay in that venue, and really that becomes the North Division representative for both the conference final and the Stanley Cup championship. I mean, those are the three primary things that are being considered. But every time I ask the question and I push on it, the NHL keeps saying, look, man, we're not even close to making that decision. And they're not. I mean,
why don't they just have the Canadian teams play in Canada and then have a neutral site for the Final Four instead of so nobody can have an advantage? And it's like, hockey fan, fill the barn. Everybody get vaccinated at the neutral site. And away you go, Final Four. Good idea? Bad idea?
Not a bad idea. I wonder if they like the idea of splitting venues from a revenue perspective, right? So you're getting gates in two cities instead of one.
Dregs, who's going to go watch the Calgary Flames in Minnesota or whatever?
Yeah,
like how do they get a gate if they're the team that goes down there?
I don't know, man. I think, you know, again, I can only speak from a Canadian perspective, and you're talking about U.S. soil here. I just feel like you put a live sporting event on and you open the doors, whatever capacity it is, in whatever state it is, I think people show up. But
well, why don't they just do it with proximity? If Toronto gets in, yeah. Buffalo's their home barn. Done. Done.
Yeah, Buffalo, maybe Chicago, right? Like, I tried to nail the league down on that today, just trying to hammer out what the cities are. Buffalo is obvious because of, you're right, proximity. Chicago, maybe, you know. So, but again, the league is willing to somewhat allow speculation on the scenarios we've discussed, but not willing to hammer out locations yet. They just don't feel like they can do that.
Dregs, you said potentially that on insider trading that there might be a change in venue for the women's hockey championship tournament.
Yeah, I mean, man, that was tough news by the province of Nova Scotia yesterday. Just pulling the rug out at the last second. But that's not to say that there isn't considerable interest in the Women's World Hockey Championship. We know there is. And, you know, reportedly last night, Dallas, you know, they're hosting the under-18s, which is a big event. If they get through that without any sort of issue, you know, could they be a front runner potentially? Finland wants to host. Hockey Canada has received calls from Ottawa. They've received calls from Edmonton. They've received calls from Prince Edward Island. They've received calls from BC. And the want is, from a IIHF and a Hockey Canada standpoint, to host this thing in late August or early September. So, you know, the great news for the women, and rightfully so, is that this event needs to be played, and it will be played. They just have to sort through all of the aftermath in Nova Scotia with insurance concerns and everything else, the contracts they had. And then they'll meet as early as next week to start identifying the most likely option for playing the event in August or September.
Well, that's good to hear. Let's hope they iron all those details out and we get rocking here, because, that was very difficult news to accept yesterday, and it sounds like they won't be accepting that, so we'll find a way to rectify it. That's always good to hear. Good stuff, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
All right, guys. Have a great night.
Darren Dreger at TSN Hockey Inside.